The stairs down from the flat felt longer than they had on any previous descent, as though gravity had shifted its allegiance during the night. Vera's hand rested on the banister, the polished wood slick with the damp that seeped through the building's brickwork every autumn. Her coat was buttoned to the throat, the letter in her pocket pressing against her ribs like a second pulse. In her bag, she carried only what she could carry: a change of clothes folded tight, a loaf of bread wrapped in newspaper, the thermos of coffee Alina had filled before dawn and sealed with a saucer. The satchel remained beneath the floorboards. She had not been able to lift it. Not yet. The street outside was swallowed by fog, the kind that made Prague feel less like a city and more like a room with the lights turned down. She pulled her scarf higher and walked toward the tram stop on Karlova, her boots clicking against cobblestones that had been worn smooth by decades of footsteps. No one else was on the street. The fog absorbed sound the way wet wool absorbs water, and she found herself walking in a bubble of her own making, the rhythm of her steps the only confirmation that she was moving forward rather than standing still. The tram arrived at 10 past midnight, its headlights cutting a pale wedge through the gray. Inside, there were three other passengers: an old man with a canvas bag across his lap, a woman in a nurse's uniform smoking a cigarette with the fierce concentration of someone who needed nicotine the way a drowning person needs air, and a boy no older than 16, his face buried in the collar of a coat that was too large for him. They did not look at each other. They did not speak. The tram moved through the empty streets with the mechanical indifference of a machine that had been built for a purpose that no longer existed, and Vera watched the windows go black, then bright, then black again, as though the city were blinking in her face. She transferred at museum, descending the stairs to the underground passage that connected the lines. The passage was darker here, the fluorescent tubes flickering in a rhythm that reminded her of the street lamp at 6:47, the way it stuttered before stabilizing, as though trying to communicate something it could not quite articulate. A poster on the wall advertised a ballet performance at the State Opera Swan Lake, the fifth performance of the weekend. She stared at it for a moment, surprised by the absurdity of art continuing in a city that was being occupied. The poster showed a ballerina mid-leap, her arms outstretched, her face tilted toward some invisible horizon. She looked like someone who had never been afraid in her life. The platform for the Western Line was colder than the rest of the station. Vera could see her breath as she stood near the edge, the white plumes dissipating into the darkness above the tracks. A sign hung from the ceiling, painted in block letters: KARLOVY VERY 4H12 MIN. 4 hours and 12 minutes. She repeated the number to herself, the way you repeat a prayer, as though saying it aloud might make the destination real rather than theoretical. Karlovy Vary was a spa town, a place of hot springs and colonnades and tourists who came to drink the mineral water and pretend they were not sick. It was not a place people fled to. It was a place people visited on holiday, sipping from porcelain cups strung together with wire, walking along the river with their hands in their pockets and their faces turned toward the sun. The train appeared out of the fog like a ship emerging from the sea, its headlamp a single golden eye that widened as it approached, then resolved into the familiar shape of a locomotive steam-driven, Sovietera. Its sides painted a faded green that had been scraped and repainted so many times the color had lost all meaning. It slowed with a groan of metal on metal, and the doors opened with a hiss that sounded almost like a word. The carriage she boarded was already full. Not full in the ordinary sense, there were seats, and they were occupied, but full with a suffocating density, like a held breath or a room where everyone shared the same unspoken dread. Strangers sat shoulder to shoulder, their knees pressed together, their bags piled in the aisles like barricades. A woman in the corner rocked back and forth, her lips moving silently, mimicking the silent prayers of the devout or the rehearsed speeches of dissidents. A man across from her stared at his hands, turning them over and over as though reading braille written on his own palms. Vera took a seat near the window, folding herself into the space with the practiced economy of someone who had spent years learning how to occupy less room than she needed. The seat was hard, the upholstery cracked and patched with tape that had lost its stickiness. Through the glass, the platform was receding slowly at first, then faster, as the train gathered momentum and the buildings blurred into a continuous gray wall. She pressed her forehead against the cold pane and watched Prague disappear. The last thing she saw was the outline of the ministry building, its brutalist concrete silhouette rising above the rooftops like a tombstone for a country that had died without knowing it was dead. Then it was gone, swallowed by the tunnel that opened beneath the station, and the carriage plunged into darkness. The darkness lasted only 30 seconds, but it felt longer. In the absence of light, Vera became aware of the sounds she had been filtering out. The coughing of the old man two rows ahead, the rhythmic tapping of the nurse's cigarette against the ashtray, the soft, regular breathing of the boy who had fallen asleep against the window. These were the sounds of ordinary life, the sounds of people going about their business, and they struck her with the force of a revelation. Ordinary life was still happening. It was happening inside this train, in this carriage, in the bodies of these strangers who were carrying their bags and their fears, and their silent prayers toward destinations none of them would name aloud. When the train emerged from the tunnel, the fog had thickened. The landscape outside was featureless, a wash of gray and white that made it impossible to tell whether they were passing fields or forests or ruins. Vera could not have said what time it was. The station clock had stopped at midnight, and the watches of the people around her were either broken or deliberately set wrong, the way people adjust their clocks when they want to lose track of time. The carriage door slid open with a clank, and a wave of cold air rushed in, carrying the smell of coal dust and wet earth. More passengers were boarding. They moved like ghosts, their faces pale and indistinct in the dim light of the corridor lamps, their footsteps muffled by the thickness of their coats and the exhaustion that seemed to weigh them down. A family entered together, a man, a woman, and two children, the younger one cradled against the mother's chest like a bundle of linen. The father carried a suitcase in one hand and held the mother's elbow with the other, his grip tight, his eyes scanning the carriage as though searching for a threat that might be hiding among the seats. They sat opposite Vera. The children were silent, their eyes wide and unblinking, fixed on her with the hollow stare of those two frightened to cry but too aware to pretend everything is fine. The mother was humming, a low, tuneless sound that might have been a lullaby or might have been something older, something that predated language and lived in the body rather than the mind. The father kept looking at Vera, not with hostility, but with a kind of desperate calculation, his gaze weighing the stranger like a threat to be measured against the cost of a wrong choice. Vera looked away. She focused on the window, on her own reflection superimposed on the fog, the ghost of a woman with dark hair and tired eyes, wearing a coat that was too thin for the weather and too heavy with everything she was carrying inside it. She thought of the letter in her pocket. She thought of her mother, sitting at the kitchen table in the dark, counting tea packets that would never be brewed. She thought of the satchel beneath the floorboards, waiting for her to return, waiting for her to come back and lift it out and carry it across a border that might not let her pass. The train lurched forward, gathering speed as it left the station behind. Through the window, Vera could see the outlines of buildings receding: the station master's house, the freight yard, the row of tenements that lined the edge of the town. They were followed by fields, then by trees, then by nothing at all, just the endless gray of a landscape that had been erased by fog and night, and the collective silence of 100 strangers who were running in the same direction without knowing why. An hour passed, or maybe two. Time in the train moved differently than time on the platform. It stretched and contracted, compressed and expanded, elastic and taut. Vera watched the fog thicken and thin like a lung breathing. The passengers shifted in their seats, adjusting blankets, whispering to each other in voices so low they were almost inaudible, huddled close as if expecting the walls to listen. The woman in the nurse's uniform leaned forward and spoke to the man beside her in a voice that was barely above a murmur. "How far?" she asked. The man shook his head. "Until Cheb," he said, and then added, almost to himself, "or until Pielzen. Depends on who's in charge of the line today." "Cheb?" The word landed in Vera's ear like a stone dropped into a well small, but with a depth that echoed. Cheb was the last town before the border. From there, it was a few kilometers of road through the Ore Mountains, and then the checkpoint, with its floodlights and its soldiers and its dogs. She had not thought about the checkpoint in detail since the night she wrote the letter. She had been avoiding it, the way a person avoids looking at a wound that is still bleeding. But now the word had been spoken aloud, and the image it summoned was unavoidable. The glare of the floodlights, the rigid posture of the soldiers, the cold barrel of a rifle raised to her level, the question in German or Czech or both Otvrit kabat. Open your coat. She closed her eyes and pressed the heel of her hand against her forehead, feeling the throb of her thumb through the fabric of her glove. The scab had cracked again. She could feel the fresh blood darkening the edges, a sticky tackiness that always returned when she pressed too hard or forgot to change the dressing. It was a small wound, insignificant in the grand calculus of what was happening to her, but it was the only part of her body that was still actively hurting. The rest of her had gone numb, heavy and distant as a limb compressed for too long, the blood flow cut off, the nerves screaming in a language that the brain had stopped translating. The boy across the aisle woke up with a start, his eyes flying open, his body jerking upright as though he had been falling and had been caught at the last possible moment. He looked around, disoriented, his gaze sweeping the carriage like a searchlight, and when it landed on Vera, he flinched, the way a startled animal flinches at a shadow. Then he recognized her, or rather, recognized that she was not a threat, that she was just another passenger on a train that was taking them somewhere none of them fully understood, and he slumped back against the seat, his eyes closing again, his breathing slowing. The old man with the canvas bag across his lap began to hum. It was the same tune the nurse had been humming, or perhaps a variation on it, the melody shifting slightly with each repetition, like a prayer that evolves as it is spoken. Vera found herself humming along, the sound coming out of her before she could stop it, an involuntary vibration in her throat. She hated herself for it. Humming was a sign of comfort, and she was not comfortable. She was not comfortable anywhere. The train was not comfortable. The world was not comfortable. Comfort was a luxury that had been revoked, stripped away like a ration card when the credits ran dry. But she kept humming. She could not stop. The melody was simple, almost childish, and it reminded her of something she could not quite place her mother singing in the kitchen, or a radio broadcast she had heard as a child, or a song that had been played in the cafe where she had met Jiri for the first time, 3 weeks ago, when the city still believed it could breathe on its own. The train crossed a bridge, and the sound of the wheels changed, becoming louder, more resonant, the way a voice becomes louder in an empty hall. Below them, Vera could see the dark shape of a river, its surface reflecting the faint glow of the train's headlamp, a ribbon of silver in the fog. The river was the Oer, the same river that ran through Karlovy Vary, the same river that had been dammed and diverted and channeled by engineers who had built their dams with the same precision they applied to everything else: roads, railways, borders. She thought of the manuscript. She thought of the pages stacked beneath the floorboards, bound in leather, their spines creased from being opened and closed 1,000 times. She thought of the words inside them, the words of people who had written them in the hope that someone would read them, who had poured their lives into sentences and paragraphs and chapters, who had believed, perhaps foolishly, perhaps bravely, that words could survive war. The train slowed as it approached a junction, the brakes hissing, the carriages shuddering as the wheels shifted from one set of rails to another. Vera looked out the window and saw a signal box on the platform, its windows lit with a yellow glow that contrasted sharply with the gray fog. A figure stood inside, silhouetted against the light, watching the train pass with the detached interest of a man who had seen 1,000 trains pass and would see 1,000 more. Vera wondered what he was thinking. Did he know where they were going? Did he care? Or was he, like everyone else, just another cog in the machine, turning his wheel, flipping his switch, sending trains in the direction that the orders told him to send them, without asking why? The train accelerated again, and the signal box disappeared behind them, swallowed by the fog. Vera leaned her head against the window and closed her eyes. The rhythmic clatter of the wheels against the rails was a lullaby of sorts, a mechanical song that had been playing for a century and would continue to play long after the people who remembered it were gone. She let the sound wash over her, letting it carry her forward into the darkness, into the 4 hours and 12 minutes that separated her from Karlovy Vary and the next step of a journey she could not yet see to its end. In the carriage around her, the passengers slept or pretended to sleep, their faces relaxed into masks of exhaustion that were almost peaceful, as though the act of traveling had temporarily absolved them of the need to think about where they were going or why. The nurse's cigarette had burned down to the filter, the ash accumulating in the tray like a tiny monument to the minutes that had passed. The old man's humming had stopped, replaced by the soft, regular sound of his breathing. The boy was asleep again, his head tilted against the window, his mouth slightly open, his hands clenched into fists that he would not unclench until he reached whatever destination awaited him. Vera blinked, the window's glass offering back the ghost of a woman with dark hair and tired eyes, wrapped in a coat that was too thin and too heavy. But something had shifted. Her expression had hardened. The fear remained, but it had sunk, settling like silt at the bottom of a glass of water, becoming part of the structure rather than the disturbance. She was still afraid, but she was also still moving. And for now, that was enough. The train moved on through the fog, carrying its cargo of ghosts toward a destination that none of them could name, their faces illuminated by the faint glow of the corridor lamps, their silence heavy with the weight of unspoken truths, like the pressure building behind closed lips. Outside, the landscape remained unchanged gray fields, gray forests, gray sky, all of it blurred into a single, seamless texture that made it impossible to tell where one thing ended and another began. Inside, the passengers sat in their seats, their bags at their feet, their hands in their pockets or folded in their laps or gripping the edges of their seats like anchors, each of them carrying something that was not theirs and yet was the only thing they had ever truly carried. The train moved on. The fog closed behind it. And in the darkness, the rails carried them forward, one click at a time, toward Karlovy Vary and the next step of a journey that had already begun and would not end until it was over.